Welcome to episode 292 of The Lab. I'm Brad Barton.
I'm Phil Barton.
This is one in our continuing series on space and space travel. If you'd like to hear the other episodes, you can find them by visiting thelabwithbrad.com.
Did somebody tickle you in the middle?
I did
it's
chuckle.
Funny to you.
You know what? I actually do want to try and play this straight this time. So, you ready for this?
Sure.
On September 2nd, 1945, a treaty was signed by the sorts of people who sign treaties.
Kings, presidents,
it didn't
dictators.
Last that long. You know? End of World War II.
Mm. Well, yeah.
But the world had already changed. Ooh. What with the nuclear bomb being dropped?
Oh, yeah.
And the V-2 rocket, mm-hmm. which could come in from space and then suddenly explode with no warning.
Oh, it's enough to, you know, keep you in bed at night. yeah.
But during the war, the other thing that happened is sort of industrial methods had matured.
Okay.
And both sides had seen what can happen when you start with some concept and take it all the way through to finished product. Mm-hmm. And then you can keep improving from there. So it wasn't hard to imagine, hey, you could build a rocket that could deliver a nuclear bomb to your enemy's territory, be they ever so far away. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, the whole world got interested in high-altitude research and supersonic flight.
Yes.
Jet engines were available,
yeah,
but they'd barely begun. Mm-hmm. They weren't all that powerful yet. During the war, Germany had a... You know, I saw a video. I knew how to pronounce this until this very moment. Mr. Schmidt 262. Uh-huh. And the Germans had the English had a Gloster Meteor.
Okay.
Those were the only two jets. Well, Germany might have had another one, but those were the jet planes.
Okay.
They barely taken off, if you'll pardon the... So they decided to slap rockets onto planes.
Yeah, yeah. That's what you do.
Germany had thought of that since 1928.
Ooh.
Nobody else seemed interested. They actually fielded the only rocket-powered fighter plane mm-hmm. ever to be used in time before.
Ooh.
It was another Messerschmitt, the 163 Comet.
Okay.
Its engine would last from 6 to 9 minutes, depending upon which source you're paying attention to.
Oh, no.
Which is actually a really long burn for a rocket engine.
So it wasn't flying dependent on
no,
that. I hope not.
No, it was a good glider.
Okay.
It could actually cause problems during landing. It's coming in at 180 miles an hour
Oops.
For landing.
Yeah.
And it was such a good glider that enough draft could blow them. Suddenly you're too high, and now you have a choice between slamming on the runway or missing it entirely. And you can't turn the engine back on and come around again, so...
Hmm.
Miserable operational record. I've heard 9, I've heard 16, and I've heard 18 confirmed kills for them.
Oh, look out. what a beast.
The pilots apparently thought it was too fast. You didn't have much time to actually, you know, zero in on your target.
Yeah. There's the enemy. Well, there goes the enemy.
So, at sea level,
mm-hmm.
the sound barrier is 767 miles per hour.
Oh, wow.
About 1 mile every 4.7 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
It changes depending upon things.
Well, altitude must be one of them.
But I'm going to be talking in Mach numbers, which is specifically related to the speed of sound at the time.
Okay.
Like when Jaeger broke the sound barrier, he was at 60,000 feet, and Mach 1 was something like 660 miles an hour.
Oh, okay.
I think.
Is this one of those differing reports things?
No, that's my... I haven't looked at my notes. I know I have it in here somewhere.
Sounds good.
Now, things had actually beaten the sound barrier before,
mm-hmm.
right? Artillery shells and rockets and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And even planes had done it in powered dives.
Oh, okay.
But that doesn't count, and it often caused problems. Because the physics sort of changes once you reach that speed of sound.
Ooh.
And pilots would find that they were in a power dive and they couldn't pull out of it.
Oh, no.
Yeah, dude, not fun for them.
No kidding.
So in October, or on October 47...
October 47.
No, I'm just... October 14th, 1947. Okay. I'm going to play this straight this time. Our old friend, the B-29...
Okay.
Dropped the Bell M1 at about 35,000 feet.
Mm-hmm.
This was a rocket plane.
Yeah.
It weighed about 5,000 pounds dry. 8,000 pounds of fuel were added. It had about a 2.5 minute burn.
Mm-hmm.
And on that date that I had trouble saying, they dropped Jaeger in this thing.
Uh-oh.
Even though he had a couple of broken ribs.
That's right. Test pilots.
Yeah, and that was the first time in level flight with a human on board. Landing safely. Broke the sound barrier.
Yeah. Go Jaeger.
Later, the X-2 got to Mach 2, I think? Mach 3? Yeah, the X-2 reached Mach 3.
Oh.
Now, this wasn't all a free ride, right? It was some competition between a couple of different teams. Who's the fastest man alive? And one day, Chuck went out in one of these X-craft, got the record, but he also lost control of the airplane.
Oh.
Because of an effect they call inertial coupling.
It doesn't sound good at all.
No, yeah. What you really need is a bigger tail fin. That pretty much solves the problem. I'm sure it's not that simple. But, you know, he landed. He walked away. I'm sure he cracked the canopy with his helmet, but...
Let me out of this thing.
No, I'm pretty sure that happened during the tumbling. I like your story, but I'm done with this thing. Screw the lever. Anyway, we should give jets their due.
Oh, yes.
Which we did more than enough of on Monday. So like I said, I mean, we can call off a show if you really are feeling awful. I've done it before.
Yeah. Well, again, Mondays are...
But it's happening. Here we are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Monday.
I'm raring to go. Is this going to be a Wednesday, Monday?
No, I hope. I got a little sick of that. Episodes have been crowded lately. I wanted a nice kickback Monday. So I avoided names and dates.
And that's it.
But yeah, I still have a plan. I still have a lot to talk about here.
Okay.
Jet engines.
Okay.
Whoosh. We're specifically talking about air-breathing jet engines.
Okay.
Now, why would you want to breathe air as an engine?
I don't know.
Because then you don't have to bring your air with you.
Okay.
We're actually talking about oxygen, the stuff that makes stuff burn.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If you're going to leave the atmosphere, you're going to have to bring that with you.
Okay.
And it's heavy stuff. Liquid oxygen is actually a little denser than water.
Oh, of course they bring it with. I didn't even think of that. I just thought it was a chemical reaction that not.
Well, it is.
Well, yeah. Like, well, you know, fuses, you light them, you throw them underwater, and they don't care.
That's there's true, oxygen in because there there's a, so it's getting its oxygen from somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay. Go, baby, go. gunpowder fuse would be potassium nitrate.
Oh.
All right, I'm glad I geeked out there for a moment.
Yeah.
This is what the whole show is about, really.
I know this. Yeah.
Wow. So the idea is to take in some air,
mm-hmm.
mix in some fuel.
Yes.
Make it burn.
Okay.
So that the hot gases go zooming out the back.
Uh-huh.
And then do work.
Okay. All right.
So far, so good. And they are very simple concept-wise, and some of them are actually really easy to build.
Uh-oh.
I see something. I know my future. Like a pulse jet.
Oh, okay.
Pulse jet, what you do is you spray in the fuel,
uh-huh.
and then you ignite it,
uh-huh.
which you only need to do once, by the way. And then there's a valve at one end of the chamber that it's burning in.
Okay.
So that gets shut when the pressure wave hits it. I mean, some pressure leaks, but la-di-da.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the thrust goes out the back end.
Uh-huh.
And then the valve opens, and for a short time after the burning has gone away,
yeah.
there's a bit of a vacuum inside the chamber.
Ooh,
okay. So when that valve opens, air rushes in.
Aha.
And if you have set it up right, you can even suck in more fuel.
That
and
would
then
be
the still hot gases towards the end of the thing
mm-hmm.
reignite the fuel.
Okay.
So once you get the thing going, it just goes. They're really super loud. Now, the thing is, you can light off fuel in any old container and not get these handy-dandy waves of pressure and back pressure and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
You know what the trick is?
What is it?
Well, you make a resident cavity for your tube.
Okay.
So basically, the jet engine is tuned to a note.
You're kidding me. You got some piano tuner in there with a dang tuning fork.
No. Like the V1, developed by Germany, went off, I've heard, 44 times a second.
Okay.
Maybe 45. Doodlebug, one of its nicknames, my favorite nickname for it, or the Buzz Bomb.
Yeah, yeah.
It was actually a little glider. It had wings and a tail. It even had a little prop on the front, but that wasn't to help it go faster. That was to spin and tell it how far it had gone.
Okay. It's the speedometer cable. You can live without it.
And they had a pulse jet strapped to the side.
Okay.
And they were using it because it was really super cheap to build. In fact, they would use spark plugs that were designed to fail the first time they worked, because that's all they had to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And the reed, or the backstop, the valve.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't likely to last more than an hour or two, but the flight time was about an hour.
You just need to get where we want things to blow up. I like this.
Speaking of compression, you can't get much in one of these engines.
Right, right.
Because, you know, too much pressure and it won't work anymore.
I didn't even think of that.
So, just, you know, in an engine when the piston goes up and pushes and squishes all that air and fuel together, the compression cycle, why would you bother to do that?
Right.
Because it burns much faster and much hotter when you do that. And more completely.
Okay.
So you get more energy that way. Same thing holds true for jet engines, only instead of using pistons, they're using spinny thingies.
Okay. There's a lot of spinning in a rocket I didn't know about.
Well, this is these are jets.
Yes.
These are air-breathing jets. And yeah, there is actually spinning in a rocket. I'll get to that. Okay. You're doing it again.
Yeah, it's my job.
Oh, no, where was I? You're doing it again.
Even when I'm turbines. Sick. Okay, cast turbines.
They've got a turbine in the back that the thrust is going through. This does not help increase the thrust. In fact, it slows it down a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But it turns a shaft. Oh. Well, thank God, we all need shafts turned.
Yeah. Shaft toe.
At the front of the shaft
is
another impeller. It's a spinny thingy. It is actually sucking in the air into a compression chamber.
Ha.
Aha.
Hence why it's not a propeller.
Yes. And then, you know, it's you squirt in your fuel, you move it into the combustion chamber. And this is continuous operation, actually. You have to keep enough pressure in the compression chamber to keep the burning bit from going back into that bit.
Oh, goodness sakes. Yeah. It's like hairspray in a lighter. You know.
Yeah. Now, this is just a gas turbine all by itself. You know, once that thing starts burning and it goes through that last turbine, that's the end of that.
Oh.
But there's a couple of things you could do with it. You can put another turbine on the end and use the resulting stream of fluid to power something else.
Okay.
Like your turbo pumps.
Okay.
Or your tank.
Why would you pressurize a tank?
You're not pressurizing it. You're using the outflow of the gas turbine to power it.
Okay.
My guess is that they have the turbine hooked up to a hydraulic system. But I don't really know. Maybe that's horribly vulnerable. I don't design tanks.
Well, they need power.
I'll note that that turbine and the gas turbine is taking energy away to spin the shaft. It gets more energy in the end because it compresses that air.
Okay.
And when you actually go with an engine, you'll have several compression chambers staggered along because you can only up the pressure so much in one stage.
Okay.
So by the end of it, it's just really hauling. And in commercial airlines, apparently you got a fan in the front.
Yeah.
Which sucks in air, and some of it goes through the gas turbine bit of the engine, and some of it goes around that.
For cooling?
I don't know. I heard it actually makes the engines run smoother and adds thrust without burning more fuel. But it sure seems like it'd be handy for cooling, doesn't it?
That's interesting, because you see the front of a jetliner, and it's spinning away. None of that has anything to do with the propulsion?
Well, it's driving the jet. Adding, help me, out here. What do you call it? Thrust.
You almost said it.
We're getting to a long Monday here. There's an even simpler jet engine.
Oh.
It's the valveless pulse engine.
Oh, okay.
It's just basically a U-bend of metal tuned properly. And yeah, it's actually the shape of the tube that keeps most of the combustion from going out the wrong end.
Hmm.
But a lot of it does anyway, which is why it's usually bent into a U so that the fire comes out of both ends. Yeah. It's just be important.
At least we're aimed the right direction.
I just like, I mentioned that one because I dig that one. No moving parts. So there's an engine with no moving parts, right?
Oh, yeah.
Which is why it seemed funny when I read a report from MIT about their plane, which is the first aircraft to fly with a propulsion system with no moving parts.
Oh, go
like,
MIT.
No, you're not. Wait a minute. There's actually an ion engine.
Oh.
I always wondered, actually, because I've heard of them used in space.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that much later. But this one, instead of trying to confine it in a tube, it goes over the surface of the wings.
What? Okay. The ones in space didn't seem very impressive to me.
Yeah, well, this the glider is like 5 pounds heavy.
Uh-huh.
Bunch of batteries in the fuselage.
Okay.
It's got a 15-foot wingspan.
Holy crap.
So, I mean, like a
it doesn't
weight
need
to
much.
Service.
Yeah. Probably
and they
do
float
without it.
Inside the gym. That's where they test it.
No breeze. Yeah.
Anyway, we better get out of here.
Okay.
Boeing B-52.
Oh, hey.
It was a next-generation bomber built by Boeing. That's why they call it the Boeing B-52.
Yeah,
8 engines.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah, 17,000 pounds of thrust apiece.
Oh, that's all you need? Wow.
Had a wingspan of 185 feet.
Mm-hmm.
This is the thing that started dropping the next generation of X-planes.
Oh, okay.
The X program did rocket planes and some air-breathing engines as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the X-15 was definitely a rocket plane.
Okay.
It did its first powered flight in 1959.
Mm.
And researching this stuff is fun because you can find era documentaries about it.
Oh.
I got a link to one of those that was playing on YouTube.
That's neat.
First time they actually got to turn the engine on.
Uh-huh.
Because there were a couple of flights where a valve would freeze open or something and they had to go fix that.
Did they drop it anyways? Or like, it'll fix itself on the
fine.
Way down.
No.
Okay, okay.
These were expensive toys.
Okay.
Play nice. Anyway, just on that first powered test run, it got to Mach 2.1.
Wow. Okay.
I hear anywhere from 2 to 3 minutes for the burn. This is what I mean, like a 6 to 9 minute burn. That's a long time.
Yeah.
Their whole mission in life was to get as fast as they could and test outside of the atmosphere systems.
Oh, okay.
So they also went for height. High enough to where all those little doodads on your wings and tail fins and so forth don't mean anything. You wiggle them around all day. There's no air to work on. So they have thrusters as well.
Oh, hey.
And one thing I was reading was saying that it was at one point there was a 3-joystick system. The pilots would use one for the, you know, usual, and then the others for controlling the thrusters.
Oh.
But, you know, they redesigned the cockpit several times. They got the record, the speed record, Mach 6.7. It's still the record for in-atmosphere level flight with a human on board. And they reached space. Wow. I actually saw some footage in a documentary about these once upon a time. And I think it was from the cockpit. Couldn't tell you for sure. But that was the Earth. That was the big, round, pregnant belly of Mother Earth. But, of course, they weren't going orbital speed. They could go up and then go ballistic and then come back. Well, orbital is ballistic, but let's not get into that. One of the test pilots was Neil Armstrong.
You're kidding me. Okay. Wow.
Anyway, it was eventually overshadowed by manned rockets with the Mercury program in the United States. Let's not even mention Sputnik.
Even though they win?
Yeah, even though they win. We're going to come back and talk about all of that, including Sputnik, next time. See you then.
Bye.